Right here in Revelation chapter 18, I am not much closer to understanding who the five kings are versus the seven kings and the eighth and thing. I've done a lot of research this past week. Here, take two pages and pass them on. This is for chapter 18. I am more convinced than ever that when you look at the time of the tribulation, okay, John is taken up. John was in the Isle of Patmos, and then he was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. So he's taken up to heaven, and he's looking down on the future, way out in the future. He's looking at the time of the tribulation, so on and so forth. But as far as John is concerned, his time frame, his time was what year? What basic year are we looking at when we speak of John the Apostle? 90 to 95 A.D. Okay, so as far as that was concerned, there were five kingdoms. That had fallen. There was one in power. There was one coming for a short time. And then there was an eighth king of the seven. Of the seven, and he has to be the Antichrist. All right, I'm more convinced than ever that some of these things are not, you know, we take things just for granted. I would say if you had the five kings, and I want you just to get this thing so that you're not confused on your final or whatever when you're reading your Bible, the five kings would have been, you know, we had Nimrod in there, but let's take Nimrod out. And let's keep Babylon. Let's keep the kingdom of Egypt and Pharaoh.
Syria.
You have Syria and Assyria. You have Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon.
Means Persian.
Yeah, so we just call them the Persians. And then five, Greek. Because as far as John, there's one in power, and in that day, that was Rome, wasn't it? Okay. So we have kingdoms, kings of those kingdoms. They're all in the past. We've moved from the past into the present. But there is coming in the future two more kings. And I don't know, but this just opened up and just let me just do some more studies. I'm not finished studying and trying to figure out. I don't know if I've thrown anybody away, but I'm going to keep with the biblical presentation of the thing, and not make that the one who is coming is Roman. There was a Roman king, or the Roman kingdom, and the emperors and all the different Caesars and things like that. That were at the time of John the Apostle. But there's coming one, he's not named. Now, if you've ever done the history from the book of Daniel, there's only one kingdom in power at the time of Christ's first coming, and that's Rome. And what's funny is that is the picture of Nebuchadnezzar's image. And when he sees an image, I drew that last time. If you remember, it was kind of a funny looking back into the kingdoms. You have the head, you have the arms, and then you have these very long toes, okay, remember? 4, 5. Go back to there. And then these very long toes. Now, why am I describing toes? Because we end up with how many kingdoms? 10 total in the long run. That's terrible looking. But anyway, His stretch, and I have a graphic there by Clarence Larkin. He's got a bunch of good stuff. I didn't incorporate too much of it in the study. I should have done more. But you have Babylon, the head. You have the Medes and the Persians here. You have Greece here. And then you have Rome. And Rome seems to disintegrate the further time in time you go. But it's still all Rome. Even until this time here, when the toes and the very tippy toes of history come along. And what is unique is the timing of this thing, whether there's one kingdom and in two stages. This future, this Rome here and this Rome here, this may be a resurrected Roman Empire, which we're calling Babylon. Now, why did he call it Babylon? I don't know. Other than to keep you connected with a previous Babylon. But this Rome falls. And then this Rome resurrects. And the Roman, that's why we're watching Europe and Europe struggle to survive. And it's a resurrected Roman Empire. One currency throughout the modern Roman Empire. And the one religion that is still in power and will take power again is going to be a Babylonian religion. Do you know the Muslims are not a Babylonian religion? The Muslims are a very strange hybrid of paganism and a monotheistic paganism, a strange thing. But Babylon and the mysterious religions of Babylon have influenced so many different religions, all cultic, including the Roman Catholic Church. So I'm just giving an impression that there is another kingdom coming, and it seems to imply the ten kings. Does anybody know about the ten kings that are going to be in power at the time of the Antichrist? And they will give their power to the Antichrist. They will turn over. They'll be in power for an hour, it says, and then will turn over all of their power to the Antichrist. So that's as far as I've gotten. I haven't gotten it all figured out. But just to answer some of the things from last week, the bit of confusion. I like how the Bible will correct your doctrine. Yes, ma'am.
That does seem to go more along with what we're studying.
Yes.
Because John said it was in the future, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has come already. Right now.
That's right. It's still yet to come. We're still in this bit of time frame here, under a kind of time in Roman influence that's very very weak, but it will come back, and like I know that it will during the tribulation. So we're still in the same time frame as John was living in, that period of time we call grace, period of time called the church age. But in the future, there is coming a king or kings. I don't know. Again, I only take so much liberty. But there are 10 of them there. If I were to draw the lines there, there are 10 of them that seem to work together and then give their power unto the Antichrist. All right, so let's go to chapter 18 here. And Revelation 18 in verse 2 says that he, an angel, cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage, as a city, is a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Again, whenever you see demons, devils described in the Bible, how are they described? Described as small creatures. I mean, you could put 2,000 of them inside a human body. Funny thing. Beelzebub means what? Lord of the flies. Not just the Lord of the angels, or Lord of the angels that fell, or Lord of demons, but the Lord of the flies, a filthy creature. So when we're dealing with demons, we're dealing with not super powerful beings. Jesus talked about a man, he says, when the unclean spirit of a man leaves that man, because the man's cleaned himself up or whatever, he goes and gets seven more worse than himself and comes back in order to inhabit that man, because he misses his habitation, his home. So we're dealing with creatures, and look at how it describes demonic activity, he says, it is the hold, the holding place of every foul, wicked spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. So, birds, hoping you understand the concept of these demons. I think if you've ever seen Alfred Hitchcock's movie, and this one would be one of Jennifer's favorite. Alfred Hitchcock, if you've ever heard of him, he did a movie called The Birds. And believe me, it is a classic. If, as an unsaved person, it terrified the bejeebies out of me, man. Wow! Birds! But anyway, so this is what is now full of Babylon when it falls. Context. In chapter 17, we saw the destruction of religious Babylon, which is Rome. We will now study the destruction of commercial Babylon, also connected with Rome again, as we'll see in Revelation chapter 18, verse 24. This city will be the center point of world commerce. So if you were to understand, when we're talking about Babylon, all right, this thing is, Babylon is here. The city. Babylon, the city. But there is spiritual... I'm not writing to it. There's spiritual Babylon and there is physical or government. Government, finances, economy, people. Alright, spiritual. This is religion. It is demonic. Okay, so there's an overlap. We're dealing with this thing called, a city called Babylon, but it has two overlays. Chapter 17 deals with this one. Chapter 18 deals with that side of the same city. That's what you're looking at. Please note how God tries to get the world's attention with the destruction of this city. And they get caught up in the situation. People get caught up in the destruction instead of a savior from the destruction. People love to blame, and they get all upset over trouble instead of the cause and the causer of trouble. Number, the next part. During the tribulation, the Antichrist answers to the world's economic problems will be based upon rebuilding Babylon and controlling the world's economy from there and Rome. Another element of this plan will involve restricting Jewish wealth and power throughout the world. Isn't that what they did during World War I and World War II? Every time a dictator came into power, they blamed the Jews and they took away all the wealth of the Jews and put it into the hands of the people. Actually, it went into the hands of the aristocracy and the oligarchy. Throughout world history, any time there has been a dictator in Europe, they always took money away from the Jews. It was strange, and it'll happen again. They blamed the Jews. Number two. Now, so when Babylon falls, or really this is how man reacts to problems, just look at first seven verses here, the indictment against Babylon's sins. After these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. So this is at a time of darkness, and here comes an angel, and the whole world sees the angel. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, has become the habitation now of devils, the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. So she's very wealthy. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she rewarded you. Double unto her, double according to his works, through her works, in the cup which she hath filled to her double. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously. So much torment and sorrow give her. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow. So she's convinced herself that she will never have problems. So here are the indictments. This is proclaimed by an angel. And God bless you. Did you notice that angels do interact and have a lot to do with man? If you go to Hebrews 2:2, Andrew, Hebrews 2:2. Bless you.
For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward.
Okay, so the word in the Old Testament, when God spake, he was using always an angel. Always using an angel. And that's hard for people to understand. Did you know at the... go to Acts 7:53.
Received the law by the disposition of the angels and have not kept it.
Okay, go to the previous verse.
Which of the prophets have not your fathers persecuted, and they have slain them which showed before of the coming of the just one, of whom ye have been now the betrayers and murderers, who have received the law by the disposition of angels and have not kept it.
So when Moses received the law, what gave it to him? The disposition or the dispensing of the law was through angels. So when Moses was talking to a bush, and the bush was speaking, and it said, I am, it was actually an angel conveying those words. But he spoke as if he was God. So angels can influence and do influence the world. Principle, don't mess with angels. Don't talk to them, don't worship them. Angels minister to us. They are at work all the time. But here's the second principle. God is behind. When it says Babylon is falling, who is about to destroy Babylon? God is. So I want you to understand, when a disaster occurs, a hurricane, an earthquake, what did people used to think about those things? They thought they were judgments of God, or what they used to list on insurance policies, acts of God. That they were things that God did. And that is a truism. God is behind the demise or the ruin of a nation, a city, a business, your health. So you need to only deal with God at the point of ruin and failure and get right with him. See Job for an example. When everything fell apart in Job's life, who did Job want to talk to? You want to talk to God. He said, oh, that there was a courtroom set up so that I could present my case before the Almighty. He wanted to defend himself against God. Who was it that actually God had allowed to destroy Job's life?
Satan.
But Job didn't worry about Satan. Job said, I've got to deal with God. When Nebuchadnezzar was kicked out of Babylon and sent to live 7 years in the dew and in the grass, who kicked him out? God did. So when trouble comes into your life, you better get right with God. Don't sit there and go, oh, it's the economy, oh, it's just bad weather, oh, it's just this. Yeah, you can say whatever you want, but you know, the one person that you got to deal with is always God. Number two, this indictment reveals who Babylon really is. She is a great city on the outside, but God's x-ray reveals what's under the skin. It is a haven for devils. It is a place of fornication, spiritual and physical. Satan is into sex sins. Notice our world is a fornicating world. And we've looked at fornication. How many times fornication shows up with Babylon? I'm sorry, with Balaam and Jezebel being described in the previous chapters there. Satan is into getting pleasure to dominate our doctrine. Number three, this calls for separation of God's people from her. Staying out of her. So if, during this time frame, if people try to get you to wear a mark on your forehead or in your right hand, what should a Christian do? Not do it. We're to stay away from that city. So if they came along and they gave you today even they required that you wear a 666 on your right arm, what would you say? No, thank you. Now, they cannot enforce it yet, at least as far as I can tell. Maybe they will or whatever. I know they will force it here in the future. But Christians have nothing to do with Babylon. You go to a Catholic church. Here's Killian, and Killian's going to a wedding, and he's got a friend who's a Catholic, and goes. And so he goes to honor the wedding, not the church. And they're in the church. They're all taking communion. Do you go up and take it too with them? No, we're to come out from them. We're not to participate with them. We may be in the church, but when they are kneeling and when they're standing, you don't do it. You come out from them. Some people have a problem with that. What do I do? What do I do? I'm in the family. I've got to go up with them. No, you don't. No, you don't. You've got to decide, and your children have to decide, I'm to be separate. I can't live in another country. I have to live here. I can't say that I can't go to a Catholic church. A Catholic church is just a building. But I'm not participating with them. So this calls for separation by God's people. Number four, and it's all because of her works. In verse 6 and 7, double unto her according to her works. And we're dealing with such evil works. Notice the cup that she holds. There in verse 4, it says, come out of her, my people. Did you be not partakers of her sins? And then verse 6 says, the cup which she had filled her to her double. There's a cup in there. We read that in back in chapter 17, where it's filled with the blood of the martyrs of saints. Now notice her priority is always herself. How much she has glorified herself. How much she has lived deliciously. What a crazy word that is. What word have you got in the NIV? Or you might get or in the New King James? What is it in the New King James there in verse 7?
Chapter 7.
Yeah, how much she had glorified herself and lived.
Chapter 18.
I said 17. 18:7.
Acts chapter 18:7.
No, Revelation said 18:7. I don't know how you're going to update that word, man. That is such a fantastic word. Live deliciously.
Measure that she glorified herself and lived luxuriously.
Luxuriously, okay.
In the same measure, give her torment and sorrow, for she says in her heart, I sit as queen and am no widow and will not see sorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alright, well, luxuriously, I it's just amazing. Deliciously is such an amazing word. You say, they would never use a word like that 400 years ago. They did. Mm-hmm. I love it. So her priority is herself. As is man's state today is, we're lovers of ourselves. Verse 7. Let's read verse 7. How much she had glorified herself and lived deliciously. So much sorrow, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she hath said in her heart, I sit as a queen, and am no widow, and I shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come. Circle these next three words. In one day. She's about to be judged in one day. Death and mourning and famine. And she shall be utterly burned with fire. For strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. So here's the intervention. In Babylon's future. Here's the judgments. Look at them. Torment, sorrow, plague, death, mourning, famine. And ultimately, fire. The duration of the judgments is how long? It only takes one day. It's just like the day of the Lord. Now, I think if I were to peg this thing, I would put... I really don't have a good timeline. You kind of have to create different timelines to explain some things. But if I were to draw a timeline here of the tribulation, I want to go ahead and put the middle of the tribulation here. All right? Now, here... After, somebody tell me some of the things that happen in the second half. Here's the Great Tribulation. The last 3.5 years. What are some of the things that happen before the second coming? All right, somehow, right after the middle of the tribulation, right after the Antichrist sets himself up on the throne, we have 144,000 soul winning Jews. Okay? What else have we got? We know that we have the seven last vials being poured out. Okay? We also, somewhere along in here before Armageddon, there is,
a rapture.
We have a rapture of the 144,000 being pulled out. Good. We also have Babylon being destroyed. No, the kingdom, this is from this moment on, the Antichrist is in control.
So that second kingdom, or that future kingdom we're talking about, happens...
This guy shows up in the first. I believe this short time is in the first. There's a temporary world empire that fails. He's only for a short time, then he fails. And that temporary world empire fails, and then comes the eighth, which is the Antichrist during the second half. Okay, so that's where I put it. But Babylon gets destroyed in a disaster all on its own before Armageddon. All right, so. Let's keep going here. We have this one day. It occurs toward the end of the tribulation. We see the impact on the world systems here. Verse 9. Let's just look at verse 9 and 10. Look, and you'll see the three systems in the world fail. And circle the word kings. The kings of the earth who have committed fornication live deliciously with who? With who's her? Okay. So all of the kings of the world, and especially these 10 kings of this final empire, seem to interact with physical Babylon. They have linked up with physical Babylon, and they have committed fornication, and they live deliciously, luxuriously with her, and they shall bewail her loss and lament for Babylon. Again, the city is referred to as a her. That city is the bride of Satan. When they shall see, or the bride of the Antichrist, when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city Babylon, the mighty city, for 1 hour is thy judgment come." Now we're looking at the ruin of the governmental system. All the world's leaders see God's judgment upon this city. And the whole world laments its loss. And it develops a complete governmental breakdown. One world government has been linked together via Babylon, and yet now has been fractured and is broken by Babylon being destroyed. They're discussing right now the fear of Russia. Russia is flexing its muscle, yes, but they've got ships right now going in the Atlantic, and there are digital cables between Europe and America that are carrying all the world's data over it. I mean, it's just incredible amount. And all it takes is, Russia's got these submersible submarines that can drop and go and cut those cables and can isolate Europe from America and cripple both economies just by cutting a wire. When I worked for the telephone company, the worst disaster we ever planned on and experienced was some JCB owner running along and digging a ditch and cutting a fiber optic cable. Mm-hmm. We had one time all of Upper Manhattan, LaGuardia Airport, all of the upper area of New York City was cut off from the rest of the world because of some stupid digger was digging along and accidentally cut up a fiber optic cable. Now, when I say that fiber optic, it was about an inch wide. It carried about 10 million telephone calls at a time. And so the airport was shut off from the rest of the world. LaGuardia Airport. Northern part of Manhattan and into Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx, they couldn't make phone calls. You're talking about panic. there are people who live on, you know, they need to get to the, they need to call the doctor, they need to get a hold of their, I mean, it was just panic, just because somebody accidentally cut one wire, one inch wire. Well, all Rush has to do is go down there and cut one of those things, and it's irreplaceable. You can't go down there and fix it. It's a mile and a half down underneath the water. You can't fix it. You have to run a whole new cable. They're realizing how fragile the world is. All it takes is one disaster, and you can cripple the entire world. Here, the government is crippled. Let's keep going on. Verse 11. The second one is the economic system is crippled. You see the word, merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over Babylon. No man buyeth their merchandise anymore. Nobody's able to buy from them anymore. And look at the merchandise. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and of pearls, of fine linen and of purple and silk and scarlet, and all thyine wood and all manner of vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood and of brass and iron and marble, and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and the souls of men. And the fruits that thy soul lusted after are departed from thee. Talking to the merchants. And all things that were dainty and goodly are departed from thee, and thou shalt find them no more at all. The merchants of these things, which were made rich by Babylon, shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, and saying, Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. What you're looking at now is the economic system failing. This would be like the 1929 depression, if anybody has read about that, but about 10 million times worse, because the whole world will be economically broke. This is a real reason why people will be upset over the loss of Babylon, because it means a loss of wealth and money. Look at the most important to the world. Do you notice the first thing that's listed there in verse 12? The merchandise of gold. Now look down at the end of verse 13. What's the least most important? And the souls of men. Buying and selling people is like dirt compared to buying and selling gold. So it develops into complete economic breakdown. Number 17 to 19, we have the maritime. Maritime means the ocean, or you're dealing with traffic, world traffic. Why would it talk about people on the sea? Because that's how you traded with other nations far off. So here's the maritime system. For in 1 hour so great riches is come to naught, and every shipmaster, and all the company of ships and sailors, and as many as trade by sea, they stood afar off, they were way back, and they cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, What city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, Alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness. For 1 hour she is made desolate. So over and over and over, everybody's weeping. It. And the transportation system, if you want to put it that way, the maritime system, that transported incredible wealth all over the world, was shut down, was affected by Babylon. There was no money left to transport. This judgment is not gradual, but just in 1 hour, the entire world's economy collapses. This burning city will attract all major shipping lines and maritime activity to the Mediterranean Sea, and they'll watch Babylon burn from the ocean. Develops into complete transportation breakdown. Notice how the whole world will pay more attention to the judgment of the city than to the judge. Christian, you better pay more attention to the chastiser of your life, Jesus Christ, than to the chastisement. And pay attention to the trial that, and not be paying attention to the trial that you may be going through. Just as Job, quit your complaining about your troubles and find out why you're having troubles is the principle. You get into a situation, your car won't start. Who do you get angry at? The car. You run out of money, you get angry at the bank, you get angry at yourself. Why don't you look up to God and say, God, you're trying to get my attention? That'd be a good place to start, wouldn't it? God, is this for me? Now look at the importance of the judgment. Try to wrap this thing up. Look at what's going on up in heaven. Verse 20. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall the great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. Now let me ask you this. Andrew, was Babylon a power at the time of his life? John's life?
No, it was in ruins.
It was in ruins. So what was surprising to John was all of this talk about Babylon, 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 Babylon. So there's going to be a rebuilt Babylon. It's going to be an empire. It's going to be in charge of finances. It's going to be in charge of transportation. Kings are going to be in power because of Babylon, not Rome. So here's John shaking his head, listening to all this stuff. But he knows that it was Babylon that killed prophets. And the Babylonian, remember Jezebel and her Babylonian religion. All of these kingdoms were all influenced by the religion and by the standard of religion of Nimrod and Babylon. So, just getting that into your mind, just seeing that how that is. So when he says Babylon is going to be thrown down, he's like, it hasn't been rebuilt yet. Verse 22. And the voice of harpers and musicians, pipers, and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee, and no craftsman of whatsoever craft he be shall be found any more in thee, and the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee, and the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Was another word for sorcery. Witchcraft, magic, powers, magical powers, demonic powers. Babylon, the religious. Again, these things I drew two circles and I overlapped them. We know that this is Babylon, but Babylon has a mysterious side. Mysterious and religious side. And it has this other side has a money side. It has people, it has kings, government, so on and so forth. Altogether, that's Babylon. And it says, is by Babylon's sorceries. I believe all leaders, even though they may claim to be atheists, even though maybe they may claim to be agnostic and without religion, I believe they're very religious. I believe if you look dark close enough, you'd find Stalin doing crazy things. Joseph Stalin, this great atheist, doing crazy things to try to communicate with the spirit, trying to get ideas of how to rule Russia back in the 1940s. So, verse 24, in Babylon, was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. Somehow, some way, all murders are connected with the lies and the sorceries of this church. Number D, the importance of this judgment. Number one, why is God judging to allow some rejoicing in heaven? There's going to be some rejoicing as your fill-in for those who cannot yet rejoice right now.
To allow first
on your fill-in there is number one, rejoicing.
To first on allow rejoicing.
Rejoicing. To allow rejoicing. As with mothers of those who die at the hands of terrorists with no retribution, you can't understand how they feel. Can you imagine being? Let's just pretend. We all go into court, and we get separated for a little bit, and some of our children, our mate, our husband, our wife is over in one section of the English market, and some of us are over in another section, and a bomb goes off by a terrorist and kills your husband. Kills your child, kills your two sons. How do you get justice? Somebody went in there and blew themselves up. That's what the Jews face all the time in Israel by the Palestinians. They pack themselves up and walk into a crowd, and they pull the explosion and it drives nails into all the people. 80 people die at a time. How do you get justice from that? One day God will bring justice. One day God will judge. As with mothers of children who die in car wrecks caused by drunk drivers. How do you get justice for that? The drunk driver doesn't even know what he's doing, and there you are, you're looking at him, and you're wanting him. Only God can bring such restitution. And there will be rejoicing in heaven when Babylon falls. Number two, to bring revenge for past sins against God's people. Why are God's people commanded to not take justice into their own hands? Vengeance belongs to God. And here you see it coming true, and it will come true. Number three, to reveal the secrets of her past. So rejoicing, revenge, and reveal the secrets of her past. You know, I give an example of Eastern European countries getting access to the KGB files. When Russia fell and the Union of the Soviet Socialist Republics became the Russian Federation, all of a sudden Estonia and Latvia and Hungary and Czechoslovakia and all of those countries that had been so oppressed by Russia now had access to KGB files, and they found out what happened to their grandfather when he was taken away in the middle of the night by the KGB. They found out what happened to their great uncle who had just spoken out once saying, you know, Stalin was wrong, and then he disappeared, and they found out what happened to him. And that's what you're looking at here. When there's such injustice, God will show it was because of Babylon, and this is what Babylon did to people throughout history. Number B, we find out that this city was responsible in some way or fashion for the death of the prophets, of the saints, and all that were slain on the earth. Who was the first one who was slain on the earth?
Abel.
And what religion was it that brought about the murder, justifying the murder of someone who didn't agree with his religion?
Doing his own thing.
Yeah, well, what religion was it? According to what you just read. Of all that were slain. See, what kind of religion did Cain have? He had a Babylonian religion. He had the very basics of Babylonian religion. Good works. Trying to get God his own way, but rejecting what he knew was right and trying to do something his own way, superior to God's commands. Babylonian religion. If you want to know what Babylonian religion is, look at all of the efforts of man in throughout the Bible history and throughout history without God. Rejecting God. And you'll see Babylon. That's what Babylon is. It has a hand in everything. It has a hand in all governments. It has a hand in all religions besides what is in the Bible. Now, this is where the rubber meets the road. This city, and it is not just literal Babylon, is responsible for the death of everybody. When we talk about Babylon, we're not talking about just Babylon, because Babylon hadn't put John in the Isle of Patmos. But the mystery part was responsible for the deaths of even the prophets. It was the attitude that the Romans had of their gods that all go back to Babylon. So this city is responsible for the death of everybody who's ever been murdered. The death of Abel was due to this city's existence even before it existed. Therefore, we're dealing with a system that must match Cain's murder of Abel all the way through history today and into the future. What caused Cain to kill his brother? His religion. This city, therefore, is responsible for the war between North and South Vietnam, for the Inquisition, for all the Middle Eastern conflicts, and so on. So at this point, God has destroyed Rome's financial system. The only thing left is to destroy Rome's leader. Now, I got you a little diagram there showing you the different kingdoms, and this is Clarence Larkin's drawing there of Nebuchadnezzar's image, and notice how the toes are stretched out, if you remember in Daniel's interpretation of the dream, at the end, at the bottom of all the different kingdoms going through time, Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, through now the Medes and the Persians, to Greece, and then to Rome. When you go through Rome and you get at the toes, what does Daniel see coming and smashing the entire image?
A stone.
Now there's some sort of a stone that comes and goes into the ocean and doesn't destroy Babylon. Babylon's destroyed without a stone. But there's a stone that falls out of the sky and demonstrating this is what Babylon is going to be like a stone being, like a millstone being cast into the ocean. But there is, in principle, the stone which the builder rejected is Jesus. There's the stone. So we have some different things occurring, and we know that we're toward the end of the tribulation. So Babylon is at the very end of the tips of the toes of Nebuchadnezzar's image. Just like it began at the head, we're now back at Babylon. B. There's a stone that comes down against the city in its final judgment. Could be an asteroid. Isn't it interesting? All three of the world systems, the government, the economic, and the maritime system, are almost in constant chaos today, ready for a complete collapse. That is where we're at. We are right at the time when all of this could take place, and nobody could protect themselves. Nobody could stop it happening. All right. Any questions? Make sure that you are filling out the questions at the end of your chapter. They're like, Babylon is the spiritual name for what city? Rome. Okay. Now, there is a literal Babylon going to be rebuilt. Agreed. But Rome right now is holding together all of the spiritual. And as a matter of fact, does anybody know what Europe, the modern Europe, is unified under? What treaty did it begin with? Not the Maastricht Treaty. What was the treaty that actually began the modern Europe that we see today? 1957, I believe. The Treaty of Rome. So the one treaty that started all of the European economic community was the Treaty of Rome. Treaty of Rome. Now that's just for your information, whatever. So try to remember what is the most important thing to this world and what is the least important thing. And so on and so forth. All right. You don't quit.